Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
I feel like a can of smashed assholes.
That's such a great line.
I was watching that movie, The Arrival, with Charlie Sheen, when he said that. And I went, what did he just say?
You know, it's funny because I was recently watching that show Stan Against Evil, which is like a ripoff of Ash versus Evil Dead starring John McGinley.
Which is a ripoff of Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, which is a ripoff of Evil Dead.
Everything's derivative.
I'm just going with Ash versus Evil Dead. They're trying pretty hard to do Ash versus Evil Dead with Dr. Cox as the star.
Ooh.
But at one point he says, hey lady, do you know that you look like a barrel of assholes? Like, so I've been hearing a lot of like gatherings of assholes like comments recently.
A barrel and a can. That would just look like a barrel and a can.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not looking in the can. I'm assuming this can has been sealed and this barrel has been barreled. Like, unless like you roll the barrel down a hill and it hits a tree and it explodes the assholes, you know, I guess
like a can is parallel sided, but I don't really see parallel sided versus lopsided affecting the vessel of assholes.
It's like, like if someone hands me a can, I'm gonna be like, great, thanks. And he's like, I'll be like, what's in it? And like, yes, smashed assholes. I'd be like, cool, I'm glad they're inside.
Yeah.
Does that really look worse than just like a can of unsmashed but obviously severed from their bodies assholes?
Are there are there cans that are clear?
Yeah, I was about to say, I'd rather have a can asshole, canned assholes than like a plastic bottle
like
of assholes.
Going out to like a barrel garden and clipping assholes like roses.
A barrel would be really heavy.
That's a, you know what the real difference is it's the quantity.
Yeah,
it would be thousands.
A barrel is like, even if it was just a keg, which is smaller than a barrel, right? A keg is what, like 110 beers,
yeah,
right? Something like that. So that's 110 cans of assholes in a barrel.
See, the thing is, like, I hear the word barrel, and like I imagine the assholes packed in there, but like there's also like a bunch of salt in there to help preserve the assholes. So it's like, how much assholes in there are there really? You got the barrel of assholes for our voyage across the Atlantic.
Arr, the pickled asshole.
And you know how there's so many like whiskeys out now, like port, you know, they do some in cognac.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different rum casks. So they're like, here's our new Macallan Scotch that was aged in a barrel of assholes. Is the barrel made of them?
Yeah. Oh, plus you have to wonder how much of it ends up being the angel share, as they call it.
Oh, it's all devil's share for that.
But the devil's cut.
John Levingood, just say something.
Hi, folks. I'm the other participant in this kind of festival of saying the word asshole. This is our dirtiest opening ever, just totally inadvertently.
I really hope someone was like, you got to hear this podcast. It's a nice PG-13 friendly show.
Yeah.
Then my quote opens it up. You're going to find out later what we're talking about. But there's a movie called The Arrival, which they stick to a lot of logic. There's not many freakouts. Like, it has an ABC pattern. But there's one line in it that is just like, I mean, it's a can. He's Charlie Sheen says he feels like a can of smashed assholes. And you're watching it and you're like, okay, this movie makes sense. He's following a pattern. Then he says that and you're like, what?
Huh?
And I think that's worthy of, you know, you know, it should be broken down. It should be thought about. Yeah. It should be analyzed.
Mm-hmm. You know, not to get into a conversation about what I'm about to say, but it's kind of like when Louis C.K. and his...
Wait. I hate to start a conversation about what I'm about to say, but Louis C.K.
No, but I'm not alliterating on purpose.
Are you just doing slam poetry again?
But no, like Louis C.K. in one of his earlier comedy specials, it's a favorite bit of his. He talks about when people say, suck a bag of dicks, and he analyzes what that means. It's like kind of like that. It's like it's really funny when you get into the analysis of these nonsense statements. Like, I'll let the listeners YouTube Louis C.K. to learn more about that. We've had enough.
Yeah.
Severed body parts in receptacles discussion. I think.
Well, you know what? Speaking of unnecessary analysis and breakdowns, I think it's time to start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. Lemongood, I think you have listener questions for us this week.
Sure. First question comes from Brent from Lexington, Kentucky. And Brent asks, you are given a blank check and access to any actors you want. What movie do you make and who's in it?
Showgirls 2. No, I'm joking.
Does it star Channing Tatum?
Yeah, no. It brings back the original cast.
Wait, so when they say, like, any actor, are they talking, like, alive, dead, or just alive?
And any actors.
Any actors.
So I think the idea is just, like, unlimited budget. Put together whatever you want.
This is what I want. I'm a big Ewan McGregor fan. I'm a big Obi-Wan Kenobi fan. I'm a big Gareth Evans fan.
Uh-oh, here it is.
I'm a big Iko Uwe fan. I'm a big fan of sand. I like Tatooine. I like creatures. And I like Star Wars. So, what we need is a Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff that takes place on Tatooine. We all know he's looking after Luke Skywalker. Something happened. Some bounty hunters figure out Luke Skywalker's identity. They can't relay the information, so they get on their speeders to travel the long distance back to relay the information, which sparks Obi-Wan chasing them, which starts a big action scene of a movie directed by Gareth Evans, who did The Raid, Redemption, The Raid 2, where it's just basically a $100 million, you don't need $250 million movie, with Obi-Wan Kenobi going through the desert. He can't use too much of his force powers because they'll, you know, word will get out that a Jedi's on this planet, and that could lead, you know, Vader and everyone coming down to here. So basically, it's just a chase film in the vein of, like, Mad Max, The Revenant. Of course, it's PG-13, but it's just Obi-Wan Kenobi lighting people up on Tatooine while chasing down these bounty hunters. But I like Sam Rockwell. I like John Leguizamo as like the bounty hunters, you know, like get them in there.
And it's John Leguizamo is a bounty hunter. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And like just, and then like they go to Jabba's palace. There's Rancors. There's that Sarlacc pit. There's like all this awesome stuff. You could sell the merchandise again, $100 million, you know. Gareth Evans filmed the Raid 2 for $4.5 million, and it's a 2.5-hour epic. So with $100 million and his stunt coordinators, he could make something special.
Next to Leguizamo, I'd like to see Ben Foster as one of those bounty hunters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's good around sand, 310 to Yuma, hell or high water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then just... I don't know. And then you could introduce other people that could help. And then, you know, of course, it doesn't lead to a sequel, but it could open up that world of Tatooine.
I feel like this question was asked and then they made X-Men Apocalypse. Like, this question can lead to a lot of catastrophe. So I like that you were very pragmatic and instead just went with, here's what would be a great film, and this is how we'd go about it.
Oh, X-Men Apocalypse. Oh, wait, I'm touching my computer screen right now. Learning.
That was so bad. Elizabeth. Blank check. Access to unlimited actors. What do you make? Who's that?
I'm a simple guy. I just want
Idle Hands too.
No, actually, but that'd be that's actually pretty good.
Just Salma Hayek standing naked for 90 minutes.
Oh no. I don't think that would take that much money either. I'm gonna go with another Ace Ventura movie starring Jim Carrey.
Ooh.
That's all I want. I know it would probably be a terrible movie, but I don't care. I just want to see Jim Carrey do his Ace Ventura shtick again, just like bending over and just talking out of his asshole. That's a callback.
I feel like in the number 23, when he works for animal control and he goes crazy, like that really is kind of like the bottomed out Ace Ventura 3.
You know what? That'd be like comfort food to me.
Yeah.
It's like watching an Adam Sandler movie now.
I just,
you know, as much as I despise like the idea of sitting through the whole Ace Ventura movies again, I do absolutely love clips of them. And it's almost any clip. If you just show me like 5 minutes, I'll love watching 5 minutes. I just kind of dread the idea of watching the whole movie.
Like, and you know, he was in the 90s, right? So now it's 20 years later. So I'd like to see how he's adapted to, you know, maybe he could be working. Well, he'd had that Mr. Magoo movie too. No, that Mr. Popper's Penguins, the Jalapeno Popper's Penguins.
Yeah.
It's like Buffalo Wild Wings does a movie.
Yeah, like I'd like to see him, like, you know, no, he's still not doing well. No. But he's still fighting the good fight.
Sure.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
I just, you know, you touched on it. It doesn't have to be good. Just give me like a couple really funny scenes that the series is known for. You know, when he's climbing out a mechanical rhino.
Oh, my gosh.
Or like a little montage where like he was trying to look at the player's rings and like when he was in the urinal next to the player.
He's getting punched.
Yeah.
What was that scene? He was like, put me in, coach. It's all psychological. What did he say? Like it's
like they're not movies. That. They're just like a collection of funny clips with like a kind of a threadbare plot.
Oh, and when he gets the spears in his legs, it's in the bone. And then he's shooting loogies at that guy who's standing still on that totem pole.
Oh, the slinky when he's going down the big staircase. Yeah. It's just give me like another collection of funny scenes of like a threadbare plot.
It's pretty hot in these rhinos.
Yeah. Oh, when he's in the projector room. Hi, old Silver. Away.
Dude, let's associate producers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my pick.
For me, it's more like, there are a lot of movies, you know, I love movies with fights, especially when there's a whole lot of different fights with different people, but those movies usually largely fail to entertain me on a fight-by-fight basis. There's usually just a couple good ones. So I want all the fighters that I like in one movie. This wouldn't be very expensive, by the way. Like, I want to see an Expendables movie with nothing but excellent, stunt-savvy on-screen fighters. Like, I want to see two teams go up against one another. And one team will be Scott Adkins, Michael Jai White, Zsa Yanin, Jason Statham, and Ray Park and Donnie Yen. They're my good guys. And then the bad guys would be Iko Uwe. Yes, we both had him on our list. Tony Jaa, the Capoeiristas from The Protector and The Quest, the Kung Fu guy from The Quest, and then like Van Damme for kicks. Like he's the bad guy leader.
For literal and kicks. Like, for literal and metaphorical kicks.
But the good guys, like they're kind of like the Jason Bournes around the world who have been recruited to team up to fight this group of bad guys. And somehow guns always get knocked out of hands and it comes down to hand-to-hand combat. And it's like Mortal Kombat, but it doesn't suck. Like that's I just want all these great fighters on screen. With Van Damme isn't really a great stunt fighter, but he's entertaining.
And maybe it could be like
a new one.
Yeah. Maybe it could be like a battle royale type of plot where why else would you have a collection of all these fighters together, you know? So
that'd be funny if they bring the movie, they capture the actors and they make them fight.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter it can just be some stupid Expendables plot, you know, like whatever, nuclear warheads, we have to stop them, I don't care. I just want to see all these great people on screen fighting.
I just imagine JCVD like kicking like a nuclear warhead out of the sky. Like he just stands his ground and he just waits for the nuclear warhead to come towards him. Wait. He's like a spinning roundhouse. Then
kicks into oblivion.
Yeah.
Like it does a 90-degree like angle and flies somewhere else.
Yeah. It goes straight back into space.
You know what I want? Speaking of 90s, I want Pauly Shore, Brendan Fraser, and Rob Schneider to remake Three Amigos.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
But it's like, you know, yeah. I just was watching Son-in-Law again.
It's a good movie. Good movie.
And it just that movie actually holds a special place in my heart. I like that movie.
Yeah, man. So we got good guys. What would be the name of your movie?
The Extuntables. I have no idea.
Extuntables? question mark?
I don't know. I didn't really think about what the plot, what the title would be. You know what? It would be named after that stupid Japanese show, Super Extreme Elimination Challenge. Because it's just a bunch of bonkers, like, action scenes.
Who's in this again?
So, good guys. Scott Adkins, Michael Jai White, Jijai Yanan, who is the little Thai girl from...
Chocolate,
yeah. Ray Park, Jason Statham, Donnie Yen. That's my good guys. Bad guys, Iko Yue, Tony Jaa, the Capoeiristas from The Protector and The Quest, the five-animal kung fu guy from The Quest, and JCVD.
I think Iko Yue would come out in a real fight on top.
I think he'd be the first to lose.
His Penkat Salat, though, I think he actually knows how to fight because that was his background before he started acting. It's not just like movie choreography.
All of these guys started out fighting.
Jean-Claude Van Damme was he a karate expert?
He was a martial artist before he was an actor. Every single person that I picked was a martial artist before they were an actor.
Iko wins. He'd be sitting on top of all of them.
I think that all of them would kick his butt. I like him.
Well, yeah, if they all teamed up on him.
No, I mean any one of them.
No. You're wrong. You know what, John? You're wrong in this hypothetical situation, yeah. Which we have no idea what would happen.
I don't know what the right answer is, but it's definitely not yours.
Yeah, I hate it when people do that. It's like, you know, I think Indiana Jones, Last Crusade's better than Temple of Doom. You're wrong.
Wrong.
It's like, no, I'm not. That's my opinion.
It's like I'm pretty sure I started that with I think.
If someone said no, I'd be like, yeah. Like, don't tell me what to think. Like, no. Wait.
So, Mark, what's your movie called? So it's OB with 18 I's and a dot, dot, dot.
OB Dirty Bastard.
OB Dirty Bastard.
OB! I mean, midichlorians. Yeah, midichlorians. It would have to be...
midichlorians in the force and...
Just call it Star Wars, the Solos. Wait, the Kenobi. Star Wars, I don't know, Kenobi.
Lazarus, what's your movie?
You know what? Just name it Star Wars. Untitled.
How about, yeah, just Star Wars. Oh, wait, we did that once.
Yeah. A new Kenobi. Attack of the Kenobi.
Attack of the Kenobi.
Revenge of the Kenobi. The Phantom Kenobi. The Kenobi Awakens. Kenobi of the Jedi.
Kenobi of the Jedi.
Empire Strikes Kenobi.
Ooh. Literally.
Kenobi Awakens. He's just kind of groggy. The alarm went off. He uses the force to, like, knock the alarm clock over.
And he hits somebody with it.
Lazarus, what's the title of your movie?
So Ace Ventura 3, but it would have to have a subtitle. Let's see. The second one was When Nature Calls. Let's see. The third one could be...
Does it have to do with the stool softener because he's old now?
How about Ace Strikes Back?
Ooh, no, I like it. Back.
I feel like that could be like the actual title.
Of Return of the Ventura.
Yeah. The Return of Ventura.
The Ace Ventura Part 3.
Einhorn Strikes Back.
That could be an interesting plot thread. Oh, like, ooh. He, she comes back. The lasers were still out.
Whoa. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? Donatello gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
They can't go to the police, so they get Ace Ventura.
Oh, wow. That would be like a great 90s crossover kind of phenomenon.
I see that.
What?
A tear just rolled down my eye or my face. Wait, how can a tear roll down your eye?
Slowly.
A tear formed in my eye and rolled down my cheek.
Someone was crying above you, dropped a tear onto your head, and then it rolled over your eye?
Yeah, that I did the tear convention 2014. That happened.
Yeah.
Like if you were on a gymnastics team and you were on each other's shoulders and stuff.
Well, we did these trust exercises where we all stood on ladders.
Yeah.
And just thought about the worst things that would happen and cried on each other.
Mark, if you see me sitting on a ladder, do not trust that that ladder will hold.
Ladders like, can't hold that much weight?
I don't know, man. If I'm sitting on a ladder, I wouldn't want to be below me.
So is that the answer to the final question? Ladders can't hold Love and Good?
There we go.
All right. All right. Thank you to our listeners for those wonderful listener questions. They were great.
That was just one question.
Yeah, they were great, like always.
So the second question.
Oh, we got another one right. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's just that one took like a long time to answer.
Yeah, that was a long one.
Yeah. You got into it. That was like a podcast. So the second question comes from Billy Crash, the host of the Last Knock podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy asks, do you think that going to the movies will become a thing of the past?
So I started doing a lot of research about this and wondering about ticket sales and you know, how much of the population is going down. So obviously movie watching peaked during the Great Depression. However, since the 1960s, the percentage of the U.S. population that went to the cinema on average weekly has stayed relatively the same.
Oh, based on number of tickets sold as opposed to
the percentage of the population.
Okay, that's interesting.
Now, obviously, the population has grown, but the same percentage still goes to the cinema. Obviously, you know, in the 30s, everyone went to, you know, the movies were big. But now, you know, with, you know, even in the 90s, more people are going. Now with, you know, Netflix, Redbox, Hulu, Amazon, all that, you know, the same percentage is going, but less people are. But however, you know, Force Awakens is coming, or I'm sorry, Rogue One is coming out now, right now, and it just broke every pre-sale ticket next to Force Awakens. It's the number two of all time. I think with these Marvel movies, with Doctor Strange doing 600 million, with the international markets expanding, with movies becoming sort of like a globalized thing, I don't think it'll become a thing of the past. Now, obviously, if we all get bigger screens in our home and there are a lot of people scaling back. And also, movie tickets have gotten more expensive. But I also just read this study where in 2014, tickets were the average ticket was In 2014, the average ticket sale, tickets price was $8.17. And 2013, the average was $8.13. So, I mean, there is a rise with inflation and cost of everything, but I don't think the tickets are jumping up that much in price. And I do think cinemas are starting to really offer more experiences. The way they're building their stadium tiered seats, it kind of blocks a lot of the cell phones that are in view that can be distracting. So I don't think it'll become a thing in the past. I mean, they're just going to have to get more creative getting people into the theaters.
So I'm very surprised by what you found. Like, I would not have expected to hear that a similar proportion of the population goes to the movie on a weekly basis. I mean, I guess there are a lot more movie releases, you know, now, but at the same time, I'm still surprised. Like, wow. But I do find that there are a lot of things that I, as a movie addict, like, I love, you know, we love seeing things on the big screen, or we don't like waiting to see things. Like, you know how I noticed this more with most other genres, horror and foreign and martial arts. When they come to our theaters, a lot of times within a week of hitting theaters, I can buy it on demand or Amazon. I can't do that with like, you know, blockbusters, The Avengers, but I can do it with like the movie, like The Gallows, that was available on demand within a week of it being released in theaters. Not that that's a good movie, but you know, like if I was dying to see that, I could see that at home.
Yeah.
So that for that one specifically, like, you know, why deal with someone who brought their 3-year-old to a movie inappropriately, or someone chatting? But yeah, no, that's neat, Mark, what you found. You're always our logistical research guy.
But then, yeah, like, but then you like think about this, Love and Good and Lazvath. You know, you're like a teenager, right? Like, you're not going to want to stay home on Friday night. I think the de facto a lot of times for kids, college students, you know, dates, like people just want to go to the movies. Like, people still go to stage shows. People still, you know, I think there's a market for movies, and I don't know. I just think, you know, it's just like ingrained in our, we go to baseball. You can watch baseball on TV, but people still go, you know, to the stadium. I think,
you're right. We crave the experience.
And like, yeah. I do think something, I, you know, theaters, chains like Alamo Drafthouse are doing things about it, but I do think things have to be done about cell phones. Like, the other day I was in Hacksaw Ridge, right? I told you this, Love and Good. I was the only person in the theater. The end of the film, the climatic experience, the climax, and this woman walks in, walks all the way up with a flashlight on her phone, shines it in front of me. And I was like, get out of here. Like, what are you like, and then like, and I was like, dang, like, she had wrecked the ending of the movie for me. And then when I walked outside, she was sitting next to her husband who was eyeballing me. And then I kind of stopped and stared at him for a while until he looked away. But I mean, there are problems with going to the movies, but I mean, I'm happy I saw Hacksaw Ridge on the big screen. I do think, you know, all right. So I was watching that movie Lights Out, the horror film with Teresa Palmer. And like, it's a cute little horror film. It actually has a nice little story, but like, you know, you go to a theater and you get like immersed in the scares because you're in a dark room. You have this big screen, but I watched it at home and I was kind of doing pushups. I was working out. I was, you know, working, you know, writing, and I kind of lost the experience of it. So, sure. I mean, you know, I just think, I mean, I think ticket sales will dwindle with the markets and Netflix and other things, but people will always go to the cinema.
I hope that's true. And again, what you pointed out about ticket sales, like, or I should say, frequency of movie visits. Like, I'm very surprised to hear that.
And like,
I'm happy to hear it.
And like, I think they said 2014 had like the lowest attendance since the 80s, which, like, you know, the other years they didn't talk about. So that's not bad. Like, that's not, you know, if it was as low in the 1980s as it was in 2014, that means there was a lull in the 80s as well, and then it went back up. So as long as Ace Ventura 3, Ace Strikes Back comes out in 2018, the cinema's safe.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi. I need to think of a name of this movie before the end of this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I agree with all the points made. I do think movie going is a thing in the past, but it's also a thing in the future. Hey.
Oh,
whoa, yeah. See what I did there? Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Every year, you always seem to hear like doom and gloom news about the movie industry. How like, oh, like less and less people are going, or like so and so movies did less than expected. But honestly, like I guess as Mark mentioned, like it all kind of still fits in the trend, like it's always been. It's just I think the reason why there's so much doom and gloom is because, like, there's so much competition for people's kind of entertainment time. I think, Levengood, I think I actually talked to you about this. Like, there's, like, so many things coming out these days, like TV shows, movies, and there's, like, so many sources, like, to watch them from, like, Netflix or Amazon or YouTube. It's, like, movie theaters, you know, they have to compete with all these things. And, like, as Mark mentioned, like, they have to think up, like, new creative ways to draw people in, like, you know, 3D or IMAX or D-Box seats or, like, maybe, like, dining, like in the theater. And it's just, like, it's like a game of cat and mouse for the theaters. Like, you know, they zig this way, but then, like, the competition zags the other way. And it's just, like, it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, the big tentpole movies, like the Marvel movies, the Star Wars movies, or things like that, like, yeah, like, that's always going to bring people in. Unfortunately, it's also going to cause, like, a lot of sequels, because that's kind of the safe bet these days. So, I don't know. Like, I don't think the movie industry is hurting, and I don't think it's going to hurt, like, in the future. But in terms of, like, the smaller, kind of less action-packed movies, you know, like something like a Green Room, which, you know, was a great movie, but it just can't compare with, like, a big action-packed movie, like, you know, Civil War, things like that. Like, smaller movies like that will just get overshadowed immediately, just because, like, that's, like, a hard movie to sell to people to, like, come to the theater to watch, you know? So that's the only thing I'm concerned about, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll find a second life on DVD, but it's kind of like you go up to your buddies. Hey, guys, you want to go watch Green Room? What's it about? A bunch of, you know, rock band gets stuck in a green room by a bunch of neo-Nazis in the woods of Oregon.
Or do you want to go watch Civil War and watch, like, Spider-Man take on freaking Captain America, bro?
Every single actor you've ever seen.
No. I want to say something, and we can maybe talk about this in a later podcast because we need to get moving. But after watching movies like The Wailing this year, The Lobster and Everybody Wants Some, like, I just have a hard time thinking that movies could be better than them this year. Like, they're like daring, hard to make, really good. And it kind of hurts me that not that many people have watched them.
It's just like,
I haven't watched them. It's not for lack of interest, though. It's just, you know, I prioritize my interests, and there's a lot of stuff out there. And then you say how great they are. It gets me a little more excited, but I kind of fall prey to my trends, right? My trends are to weird genre movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tend, you know, so when I'm thinking of, oh, what should I watch? If you were in my mind and said, hey, The Lobster is on HBO, it starts in 5 minutes, I'd probably turn it on.
And that is a weird genre movie.
but not the genre, you know what I mean, though, like the Fantastic Fest kind of weird genre movies. Maybe that is. I don't know. Like, he's walking his brother, isn't he, in that, like, as a dog?
Yeah, it's insane.
Okay, maybe it's more genre than I realize.
It is violent and bloody. And bleak, but
wait, The Lobster is violent and bloody?
Oh my gosh, there's some insane stuff in there.
The Lobster?
Oh my gosh, like, pain and destruction is played for laughs. Like, there are some scenes that are brutal.
The reason that I really want to see it is John C. Reilly talking about dancing.
Oh, it is a really weird movie.
Honestly, it's a hard sell, because it's like, hey, you want to go watch The Lobster? It's like, nah, bro. I got to watch the new season of Gilmore Girls on Netflix.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah, it's rough. All right. So what's the final answer for this question?
Not the first season of Gilmore Girls.
Well, there's a new season. It's,
not that one either.
Hey, I'm going to pour me some coffee. Yeah. I'm going to put my hat on backwards, and I'm going to watch me some Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I actually put it on my list because I heard, like, it's if you get past, like, the girly aspect of it, it's actually a really witty show to watch.
Yeah, I've never seen a single episode of that show, but isn't that how Melissa McCarthy got started?
Yeah, my wife Megan's going through all the seasons again just because she watched them so long ago. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought the show was overly written. Like, when you watch it, you'll just feel the creators, you know, I was going to say, like, footprints, but that feet don't write unless my left foot and you're Daniel Day-Lewis. But it feels very every show's written, but this one feels very written. But once you get into the flow of it, you don't notice it anymore.
Hmm.
And you'll know what I mean. Like, you just got to get into the dialogue of that world.
Sure. Sure.
So
the answer is just give Gilmore Girls a chance.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you once again to our listeners for those wonderful listener questions. I think that's all the questions we have for now.
Correct.
Love and good. I think you had a topic for us this week.
Yeah, you know, a couple episodes back, we did bonkers sci-fi. We did The Fifth Element and Jupiter Ascending. And this week, kind of like how before we did a 1997 and a 2015 movie, we're going to do a 1994 and a 2016 movie.
Wait, wasn't it 96?
I thought it was 94.
You're probably right.
It was in the 90s. Yeah,
that 90s movie that is 94 or 96.
We're on the 20th anniversary. I just Googled it. We're on the 20th anniversary of The Arrival right now, guys.
1996, as I said. 1996.
Wait, insert year here.
Someone edit, but Laz, go back and edit that. And then edit me saying to edit it and edit it again.
Yeah.
1996 and 2016.
So then you got to edit out what I said about the insert edit here.
Edit him talking about the edit of the edits.
Yeah, I'm going to get right on that.
So, but in this case, these aren't two bonkers sci-fi movies. They're two very large scale movies. One of them, I think, is a little bonkers, and the other is totally not bonkers. And we're going to start with 1996's The Arrival. And I think it's funny that for both these movies, we get these oversimplified IMDb synopses. No synopsis could do either of these movies justice. Like, IMDb says, Zane, an astronomer, discovers intelligent alien life, but the aliens are keeping a deadly secret and will do anything to stop Zane from learning it.
Wait,
it sounds like a Sci-Fi Channel movie of the week.
Is Zane an astrologist? I thought he was like an audio...
He's a radio astronomer.
Radio astronomer. Gotcha. So he's an astronomer, I guess.
I mean, in the movie, they call him a radio astronomer. I'm sure that in astronomy, that's a thing. Kind of like I'm an insect taxonomist, but insect taxonomists are entomologists. Like, I guess that's why we are not familiar with radio astronomy.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, a lot of people say I'm kind of rock and roll, but I'm also a little country.
There you go.
So wait, I just got to say something real quick. The Arrival is about listening, right? Arrival is about communication. Signs is about learning to believe and have faith. Close Encounters of the Third Kind is learning to believe in your dreams and to follow them. Independence Day is about punching jerky aliens in their stupid faces.
I thought it was going to have something to do with crazy Quaid going up the butthole of a spaceship.
and then putting it into a barrel.
Oh, that's a callback.
So The Arrival, though, was written and directed by David Mark. How do you pronounce his name?
Twowey.
Now, Mark, you love this guy, don't you?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that's on the fringes of Hollywood, and he's been doing good work for a long time. So there's movies. He wrote Waterworld. He wrote a few other films. Don't write that against him. Fugitive, yeah. Really good film.
Warlock.
And then he moved on, though, to some very good genre pieces. I think his work on Perfect Getaway, which features Timothy Olyphant, Mila Jovovich, is a really good thriller. I also like his work a lot on the first Pitch Black with Vin Diesel. I think he is a very capable director. I don't think he hits home runs, but I think his style, to me, plays safe. Like, I think he I like him. I think he could fill in on any movie and do a decent job. And even with this Arrival, I mean, there's some silliness to it, but it makes sense. This movie makes sense to me, at least. Like, it follows a ABC structure, and I think he's good at that.
Well, this movie, like, a lot of the times I feel like this was like a big scale, like a global conceptual scale, because there's stuff going on in Mexico, various places in America, and Antarctica in this movie. Like, they're reaching beyond, you know, a one metropolis location, which is kind of, you know, the old standard, right, even for big budget movies. So he's going global, and he's got big concepts. Every now and then, though, he throws in what I would call a Bad Movie Tuesday component.
Yeah, like the aliens in this movie, they do crunchy leg jumping.
But like the opening scene, right? It's a beautiful scene, beautifully shot. There's a climate researcher in the middle of a lush green grassy meadow with wildflowers and all this stuff. And then when it pans out, it's this area the size of a football field in the middle of Antarctica.
Yeah.
To me, it looks beautiful and it seems well thought until you think about it. And then you realize it's a bad movie moment, because how did the seeds of 40 different species of plants suddenly end up there?
Wait, no, swallows, African swallows.
They weren't up there. They never migrate up there.
Well, you know, penguins learn to fly. No. Africans, all right, so penguins swim to Africa. They need to get back to Africa. So they hire African swallows with two strings attached to, you know, there's a string attached between two African swallows.
And Monty Python.
And a little penguin rides the middle.
So I was about to say, there are coconuts involved.
Yes, somewhere. They are. And like while, you know, like the penguins are riding, they also have to go. But yeah, but this movie, right? Okay. But like,
so it's a great scene though. I love the scene.
And I also love that the beginning, he actually gets this 42 seconds of audio. He finally gets something, and then they just kind of like shit can him.
Right. Our astronomer is Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
For our listeners, and Richard Schiff back before his West Wing days. And yeah, they stumble across this signal, and like the big deal is that they have to get it confirmed, and they couldn't get it confirmed by another satellite station.
Yep.
So then they take it to the superior guy, right? Their boss, their kind of NASA-ish boss. And he is really skeptical, but where were you going to go with that, Mark?
Yeah, and then he ends up getting fired, Charlie Sheen. And then, but I like what they did next. He started working with antennas, like the big old school TV antennas. And then he finds out who has them. And then he ends up building this really pretty cool looking and believably seeming lab in his home. And he uses those antennas around the neighborhood to listen more to alien noise. So I don't know. It just seemed like this sounds weird to me, and I'm like complimenting the director for making a logical story, but I appreciated it. And Charlie Sheen was really trying. When you think about him in the past, he was in Wall Street. He was in Platoon. Like, the dude could act, and he's really trying in this film.
So I liked what was going on here too, and it made it kind of cheeky how he's going door to door talking about these free, you know, satellite service upgrade, whatever, for their
game.
But, like, I mean, did anyone else find it a little silly that basically with a few trips to Radio Shack, he could make this lab with this, like, liquid nitrogen coolant system for all his supercomputers and everything?
Honestly, Love and Good, back in the 90s, Radio Shack was the shit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fair. All right. Yeah. All right. The Radio Shack has been.
And also, like, you think about these movies that have come out, and I'm not saying you support these, Love and Good. I'm just kind of talking about, like, the history of cinema, where, like, in Ghostbusters, the latest one, she's like, yeah, I developed this nuclear power fission pack overnight. Like, I think people just have to yada, yada, yada these things, because you could make a whole movie about him preparing that lab. So you kind of, you have to condense it. So for me, like, when stuff like that happens, I'm like, yeah, I get it.
Okay, now the more important question. When he redirects all those, you know, cable dishes, right, all those satellites, does it screw up people's coverage of the Packers game?
Yes, it does.
So, like, people are, like, calling off the hook complaining. So he's getting fired. We just aren't seeing that happening.
Well, we don't know. He probably resets them. He's like, oh, I'll go check out the problem, and then he fixes them.
It could do it.
You know what I mean?
They just missed the conversion is all.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you have to say to people. Oh, your Johnson rod is not working.
Your Johnson rod?
Oh, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, your glove box filter's on the fritz.
Your sphincter loop is a little off.
Yeah, and people would be like, oh, man, I didn't even know that existed.
Man.
So,
yeah,
so
those sphincter things
so
are really
he's
bad.
Doing this stuff, right, and he sees, like, these trends that lead him to believe he follows this signal, and he realizes it's coming from, like, some radio station in Oaxaca, Mexico. And the climatologist sees a bunch of data about how our world is starting to cook itself in a short period of time. And she's noticing that some of the epicenters of this activity are around Oaxaca, Mexico. So they both go to Mexico at about the same time.
Yeah.
And then there's an assassination by bathtub scene.
That was awesome. So there's a scene where Charlie's just kind of chilling in a he got pretty beefed up for this movie. But he wasn't like too jacked. He looked like he had some like 2 to 3 weeks in the gym. Or no, 2 to 3 days, 2 to 3 days out of the week in the gym.
He also looked like his skin was still a little raw from when they waxed his chest.
And like, yeah. And then bathtub's falling. I mean, he sees some weird guy. He chases him. The guy does crunchy legs like an Insidious 3 and jumps away.
Yeah, he grasshopper jumps. Like he pops his knees backwards and then jumps. And when that happened, that was my moment where, like, you know how, like, the effects might have been serviceable back then, but now you look at it and you giggle? Like, I lost it when I watched his legs pop backwards and he slow-mo jumped up to the roof.
Yeah, that was not good.
I'm not calling that, like, one of the bad movie moments. It's just that by today's standards with those effects, it smacks of that.
I mean, there's a lot of laughable things to the arrival, but it's still fun.
Like later when the second assassination attempt is releasing a couple of pet store scorpions in a hotel room, and they evidently are active attackers.
And he puts them on ceiling fans.
I know, and then they dive bomb. Like, yeah. They're going for the victim. It's
But I do like the idea of this movie. It's about listening. Right?
It is about listening, and it's also about more ethnic-looking versions of its white actors.
Oh, can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
All right. I want to ask you guys this question. I want you to answer it seriously. What is scarier? You guys are alien. No, you guys are Charlie Sheen. You go onto a ship, and you see aliens, right? Or you own that spaceship and you find Charlie Sheen inside of your spaceship.
Wait, what if I see an alien transformation chamber transformed Latin Charlie Sheen?
And that happens, man, in the movie.
Look, is that movie that scene, right? That is just funny, right? It's not a racist moment, is it?
Well, because these aliens were being turned into something to fit the population.
But they also said that they're Ron Silver.
Yeah, but if they were in, like, Sweden, they would be looking Swedish. So I just think the placement – I don't think it was racist because that's where they were.
Okay. And it was kind of funny how, like, he was like, yeah, you made a mistake because – there's the Ron Silver, who's his boss of that, like, space research center in Arizona or whatever. And then the same physical model is used with a Latin filter, if you will. It's just Tanner with a mustache version alien in Mexico.
Yeah.
And it's like, I found, like, you didn't realize you made a mistake. And I'm just sitting there like, okay, I guess they only have so many, you know, maybe versions. It's like all that alien technology, and they missed that. But they didn't have computers like we have today, I guess. They didn't think of that when they were writing. It was just kind of fun. That was so funny to me, was the Latin Ron Silver and the Latin Charlie Sheen.
And like, yeah, I just think that's, you know, maybe the aliens didn't know better.
So do you think that with what – so the aliens, right, they're kind of commandeering our energy industry.
Green gases. Greenhouse gases heat up the earth to make it more inhabitable.
For them, yeah. So
yeah, they're
like,
terraforming.
But they're using energy conservation as their ruse, even though these energy facilities are pumping out insane amounts of greenhouse gases, superheating these regions. But like, and that's what made that kind of Antarctic pocket with the wildflowers or whatever. But so like, I mean, it's not the same level, if you will. This is more of like a comment rather than the movie being social commentary, in my opinion. But did you see a little They Live glimmer in that?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit. It wasn't as overt.
And like they're living among us while it's happening to oversee it, I guess.
I guess they weren't like having us. I think John Carpenter's film was much more angry.
Oh, yeah,
this one.
Definitely. And yeah, overt. And like Carpenter's film, that was just all allegory. Whereas this it was a component that happened to span the movie, but it's just a component.
Yeah, there was nothing subtle about They Live.
Obey.
Yeah, exactly. Assume. But like this one, I think tried for some of that.
You know, I gotta say, so I'd said in the beginning, like this tried to go global. It's got big concepts. It's not quite a bonkers movie, but it has some of those bad movie moments. But like when I really look back at this movie, and while I was watching it, even though there are a bunch of weird little bad movie-isms, like his hair is always perfect and he's an astronomer. I don't think that would ever happen, especially with all this, you know, weird little things like that, right? Little things. The crunchy, jumpy legs, the Latin Martin Sheen, the weird assassination attempts. But I look back at this movie and I maintain, like, this is an impressive, like, again, like, grand scale, ambitious invasion movie. And I was shocked when I looked up the budget and saw it was only $25 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's what David Twohy's good at. I think he's good at making 20 million look like 80 million.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, by today's standards, I look at these, the alien CGI is horrible, in my opinion, by today's standards. And back then, it wasn't amazing. I remember not being impressed back then either.
I mean, like, Jurassic Park came out in 96. Independence Day was 96.
Right. And so, yeah, it's not even a fair comparison, but they had, what, budgets that were, you know, what were they, five times or more?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's 25, yeah, I would say five times easy, yeah.
Yeah, and this only made $14 million box office? Did I get that quote right from IMDb?
Yeah, because this was during, like, Charlie Sheen's squirrely years, other squirrely years. Like, remember he did, like, The Chase, and then he had, like, you know, he kind of got in a lot of trouble in those years?
Man, you're not being really too specific here.
I mean, we're talking Tiger Blood.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know what? Like, I know it sounds weird that we're talking about The Arrival compared to Arrival. But I don't know, man. Like, the world needs $25 million movies like this. So, and it just got a special edition Blu-ray release.
Yeah, and I bought it for this. Like, I bought it for this, and when I bought it, I was kind of buying it ironically almost. Like, it's like I'm going to watch it anyway. Do I pay $4 on pay-per-view, or do I just buy the Blu-ray for $6? And I am now, like, really glad that I bought this.
Yeah, it's a fun little movie.
Like, I'm legit, like, I'm not going to go, like, watch it again next week or next month, but like chances are if I have like my cousin over and his wife or something and maybe like their 7-year old and they're like, what movie should we watch? I'm like, well, I've got The Arrival. Like, Lazabeth, did you see this way back in the day? Do you remember how often Charlie Sheen is shirtless in this? It's like a Channing Tatum amount.
No, I didn't see this movie at all. I think it was
I think Channing Tatum modeled this movie for how often he goes without a shirt in his
I movies. Think Jupiter Ascending ripped this film off.
Les, what do you think is the best and worst thing about The Arrival?
Probably Charlie Sheen for both.
The best and worst?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. All right, guys. I think now's a good time to take a break. And yeah.
Scorpions!
See you guys in a little bit.
Hey guys, I got a question for you.
Okay.
What's your favorite shark? Kyle?
Mako.
Oh, nice. John?
Street, tiger. Right?
Ooh, mine's San Jose.
Okay.
So now, why are we talking about sharks?
Well, you said San Jose. That's like Word of the Bay, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Why are we talking about sharks?
Oh, we do a podcast.
Right. It's a different one than Word of the Bay.
We talk improv, right?
Okay. Walks. Yeah, we talk about that. We talk about a lot of stuff. Just kind of our daily lives and just,
video games.
Movies. And
they all involve sharks in some way.
Yeah, most of the time.
This has gone terribly.
Well, away.
Away? Wait, explain to me what away means, please.
Away?
It's like kind of like a no way, but an okay way.
Okay, where can I find the podcast?
Okay,
sharkdropper.com.
Sweet.
Okay. See it.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Yeah, that was actually a really long break that we had.
Yeah, it was.
Usually, I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. Whenever we take a quote-unquote break, it's usually just like 3 or 5 minutes, you know, whatever. We stop recording. But this time, it was like really, really long.
That was a long break.
It was a long break.
We covered a lot of life there in our chats.
I think there was like a lot of the talk of canned assholes. Just we needed like a break, like an actual break.
Yeah.
Like, man, what happened there?
I just went and ran 2 miles.
Yeah.
Just you have more than enough time. Yeah.
Just get the image of the barrel of pickled assholes out of your head.
Wait, who's pickling it now?
No, yeah.
Like, that sounds like more time. Does that make them pucker up?
Even what, more than what usual?
Like, what does pickling do?
Gives it a unique, like, a flavor profile.
Just does it, like, when you pickle pickles, yeah. Do they last longer, obviously?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you don't pickle pickles, you pickle cucumbers.
Yeah, but you know, you pickle pickles.
Well, no, a pickle is already pickled. You can't pickle it.
But you can't just leave a pickle and expect it to be good in like a month. You got to pickle a pickle.
It's in a state of pickled stasis.
Yeah, but you know what? You tie a tie.
Can I just go on like a little rant here? Because this reminds me of like
a tie. Yes. If a tie is untied, is it a tie?
Yeah. Like, all this talk of pickles reminds me of, like, this incident I had, like, a couple weekends back. I went to, like, this fancy new deli that just opened up here in town in St. Pete. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get in trouble, whatever. But, like, I'm not going to say I got in an argument with, like, the clerk. I just got into, like, a philosophical debate. Because, like, in their condiment section, I noticed... The one of the labels said pickled cucumbers. I told the guy, I was like, well, isn't that just pickles? He's like, no, they're pickled cucumbers. I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, but like when people say pickles, they usually associate it with cucumbers. So I don't think you need to say pickled cucumbers. It's like, listen, man, people can pickle a lot of things. So that's why we say pickled cucumbers. I'm like, yeah, but yeah,
The term pickling came from pickling in quotes.
Yeah.
Cucumber.
The thing is, like, my argument was that, like, well, the only pickle thing I see on here are the cucumbers. So I think you just say pickles, right?
Like, well, there's no need to confuse it from the pickled mayonnaise.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That was just like a little interesting interaction I had. I don't know.
You're just out fist fighting people, aren't you?
Yeah.
Laz, I feel like you should write some sketch comedy just about this scenario, but like dark, like hard R dark comedy,
like a barrel full of pickle assholes.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
I mean, who's pickling these?
Yeah, we're not going to get the answer to that question, which reminds me, we have another listener question to get to.
And they won't get the answer to this one.
Nope.
One more. All right. This one comes from Neil from Greenville, South Carolina. He's a regular question contributor. He says, you, Levin Good, love bugs and horror movies. So to Mark and Laz, which horror movie bug would Levin Good be least scared of and most scared of?
So I was thinking about this, and knowing you, Levin Good, I just feel like you... Any bug I bring up, I feel like you'd be like, I'd squish it. I'd headlock it. I'd give it the New Jersey Turnpike. You know what? I just came up with that. But I feel like the New Jersey Turnpike is when two guys in New Jersey, right, they get into a fist fight. and they're throwing really clumsy shoulder punches. They're throwing looping punches. And somehow in their fight, they kind of like latch onto each other and they start wrestling. So there's a big circle around them. You know, they're like, grab them, grab them. But then these two guys are like in this stalemate because they don't know how to wrestle. But somehow they ended up like wrestling with each other.
Yeah.
But one of the other New Jersey guys gets an upper hand on the other Jersey guy and picks him up. And then just spins the guy in the air. I think that's the New Jersey Turnpike.
So if it's that's the New Jersey Turnpike, does that mean they pay like an overpriced toll like every mile?
Yeah, exactly. Like every spin, the guy who gets spun has to cough up $20.
Dang.
I feel like all those tolls go to feeding Christie.
So I feel like when you pick up a New Jersey guy and you spin him five times, he owes you $100. And that's the New Jersey Turnpike. So I feel like the insects you would be actually afraid of are the weird insects from the mist. Because our show, you know, since they're in the mist, you have no plan for them. And we've witnessed you on this show when I told you that your shoes were untied and you like lost it, like with your improv skills. So if you're like, if you could see a bug, I feel like you'd be like, I'd squish it. But if you're in the mist or if you're in a grocery store and you can't see outside and your friends are getting hurt, I think that would really affect you. The unknown.
Those giant bugs from the mist were terrifying.
See?
Those were also H.P. Lovecraft bugs. Those were based on the Migos from the Lovecraft stories.
I think you would be terrified of the unknown, what's out there.
I'm terrified of it now.
Yeah, you could not Jersey Turnpike.
Now they have six legs. They're unturnpikeable.
You would try to turnpike it, and they would just suck all your blood.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, I'm spinning it. Wait, I got no blood.
You know what's actually terrifying is that because I'm a much larger than average person, like some people be like, yeah, but John could just fight it. But if there's a whole lot of those bugs, more bugs can actually fit on me at one time. Ooh. I'm serious. Like, so a swarm of those evil mist flies, more of those flies could comfortably land on me and bite me at one time.
Yeah, you would have no blood in about 3 minutes.
Like, yeah, it wouldn't be good.
You would look like a pickled Levengood.
Yeah. I'd be like one of those exsanguinated cattle from one of those Mansquito movies on the Sci-Fi Channel.
It's like, no, I asked for barreled assholes, not barreled asshole.
And I just don't think you would do good in mist either. I just think you're the type of guy who, if you're walking in mist, you would get frustrated pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. Big guys, they get frustrated and they start swinging wildly and then they bump into some monster that's much bigger than them. And it's not good.
Yeah. I remember I was a bouncer at a bar one time and we had this guy. I mean, he was like, I'm not saying you aren't, but this guy was like really on roids. He was just like a roided out monster. And one time I let him borrow a pencil and he didn't give me my pencil back. So I was like, did you eat my pencil? And, like, he's like, no. And, like, since he, like, was, like, playing with him, like, you ate my pencil. He's like, no, I didn't. Like, you ate my pencil. And then like, he started freaking out that night because I accused him of eating my pencil.
So it would be funny if later you caught him with, like, pencil shavings on his lip.
But imagine him in the mist. I just think weightlifters do terrible in mist.
Like, I'm not going to disagree with you at all.
Sigourney Weaver was not a you know, she was in with the gorillas in the mist, and she did fine. But if you did Arnold Schwarzenegger in the mist, he'd be done.
Nope. Yeah, he'd be done. I mean, think about it. When those guys couldn't see the alien in the movie Predator, what did they do? They cut down half of Guatemala's trees, and they still didn't come close to it.
Yep. So when big guys can't see something, I think we got a theory here. Bulgarius from Troy didn't see that spear coming.
Yeah. No, he didn't, I guess. Well, he didn't get speared. He got the short sword stab.
Oh yeah, you're right. He missed. Oh dang it! Well, he didn't see that coming.
No one saw that coming, man. When I first saw that movie, that knocked me on my ass.
So yeah, if you're a muscular guy, just always see stuff coming, and you're okay. Because like you lift heavy weights, you know what they're all about. But if someone put like a blanket over the weights, you guys would lose it.
Oh, no. Yeah, you don't even know what kind of force to put behind it. It's
crippling. It's interesting.
It's true, though. It's true. Like, it's like when you go to pick up something that you think is really heavy.
Yeah.
Like, you almost, like, throw it over your shoulder.
If you're going to be bug wrestling, I want to see the bugs, you know? I want to be tactical about it.
I wouldn't mind the mist, because that means they couldn't see me as well.
Lazabeth, where do you weigh in on my fearful bug proclivities in movies?
What about the ones from Mimic? Right.
Oh, that's awful. That thing's awful.
I mean, I know you're a Del Toro fan, so.
A huge Del Toro fan, but that thing is awful. Not the movie, the thing, the monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, they would stab you.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really block that.
I mean, could you still classify them as bugs, though? Like, or.
In quotation marks.
Yeah.
Like, so there's like a Lovecraft thing here, because Del Toro likes Lovecraft as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's all over Lovecraft.
So basically, if they're Lovecraft bugs, you hate them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were cockroaches. And they wore trench coats. That's terrifying.
Well, no, it just looked like a trench coat.
Wait, it didn't wear a trench coat?
No, it was the way it carried its wings.
Oh, I hate that movie now.
And like what looked like the guy's face with the hat was actually its front legs and the little palps around its face, like positioning themselves, and it would lower its head. So like you can see when it would shift from roach to human form, it would lift up its arms and put the equivalent of an insect's hands, its tarsal claws, over its head, and the shape looked like a human head. It was really weird. Only in like shadowy silhouette form. That's why it was always in the dark and at a distance.
I don't like this movie anymore.
That movie creeped me out. That makes me want to watch Mimic, actually. We should do Mimic and some other weird movie in the future for a podcast.
Ace Ventura 2.
Ace Ventura?
Ace Ventura 2.
Let's do it. Ace Ventura 2 and Mimic.
Wait, are we doing Mimic 2 and Ace Ventura 2 or Mimic 1 and Ace Ventura 2?
Mimic 1 and Ace Ventura 2.
That would be an interesting podcast.
Yeah, give it a few weeks.
What's the common theme between these two?
It's when nature calls and when nature fights back.
Yeah.
I just don't want to watch. That's a good one, actually. When nature calls and when nature. I don't want to see movies where cockroaches are faking hats. I want to see movies where cockroaches are wearing hats.
Like, actually, like in a Far Side comic.
I want them wearing like a pork pie hat.
Like, yes. There was a scene in a movie.
Far Side comic.
There was a scene in a movie with a roach wearing a hat, wasn't there?
Joe's Apartment? I don't know.
Beetlejuice?
I bet a bug wore a hat in that movie.
He's like, hey, how's it going?
Wait, sound like Nick Cage there. Like, bugs. I don't like bugs wearing camouflage hats. Just seems like cheating.
Okay, so I'd be afraid of the mimic bugs and the mist flies. I wouldn't be afraid of any bug that I can see clearly.
Yeah, because you'd just be like, I'd turnpike it.
Wait,
kick its ass.
What about the bugs from in Starship Troopers? Was it just giant bugs, right?
Yeah,
yeah. You would be like not scared of those, right?
Don't get me wrong, like. I would be scared of being in close quarters without an assault rifle.
But you'd be part of a squad with like a, you know, Casper Van Dien leading the way, and all that, you know, rah rah. Like it'd be tough to be scared, right, in that situation.
I know. I mean, you see, you're never surprised by them. Like, I mean, you see it coming before it can hurt you, like. I think that's a different kind of scared.
If they attacked you during a sandstorm, you would be afraid of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah. But then you have like Denise Richards by your side.
You know what bugs I'd be afraid of that I could see though is that swarm of carnivorous scarab beetles in The Mummy. Like they would terrify the shit out of me.
That would be the worst.
Like swarms. You can be scared of swarms because even though you can kill one with every swing you take. Even multiple with every, there's still so many of them. It doesn't matter.
If a giant bug in a pork pie hat killed me, I'd be like fair game. But if a bunch of scarabs ate me alive, I'd be like, I hate you.
Yeah, like as you're swinging your arm to pound five or six of them into mush, right? You do that twice in 3 seconds, and you squash like 10 of them. But in that time, 800 of them all took a little bite out of you. Like that's horrible.
Yeah.
That would terrify me.
Especially during a sandstorm.
I guess so. I mean, the swarm is bad enough because the swarm almost has that effect.
Yeah.
because you can't focus on any one. Like, it is amorphous.
There'd be nothing left
of me.
Hey, what? Of course. Of anybody.
So, right? What's the final answer to this question?
Nothing left of me.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The answer is no John left.
That sounds like a Kelly Clarkson song.
Nothing left. No, I'm not going to try. There's nothing.
Like, it's just like there's nothing left of her, so she had to leave.
I'd like to hear her do a song about monstrous carnivorous swarms of scarab beetles.
During sandstorms?
Sure, it could be during. Sandstorms can be the name of the album, and this is just one of the songs.
Ooh, sandstorm, scarab beetles, killing me. That sounds like a country song now.
more of a Taylor Swift jam now.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we answered that question fully and thoroughly. And actually, we didn't really answer it. I don't know.
Literally and figuratively.
We didn't really get to the bottom of it. But thank you for that wonderful listener question. And Lemongood, what's the second half of our topic today?
So from 1996's The Arrival, we're going to fast forward 20 years, drop the, and we have Arrival, which over simply is described by IMDb as a linguist is recruited by the military to assist in translating alien communications. Despite that overly simple title, this might have been, if it's not my movie of the year, it's tied for it. Like, it's a top five for me.
And you know what I like about this movie is it is simple, but it's also very – when you break it all down, you can condense it. But there's a lot more to it than what you think. Like, it's a very – it makes sense to me. I guess I could break it down in a few sentences. But
I understand what you mean by the simple. I agree that it's simple, that I feel like most everybody – understood what was going on in the movie, at least leading up towards the end. But like, to me, it was actually, you know, like I thought it was a complex notion that was just very, very well presented. Like no one had to figure out the first hour and a half of it. Does that make sense?
And massive spoilers here, guys, of course, like all other pods, but I caught on pretty earlier that you thought she was having flashbacks, but I figured out that those, in my head at least, I was like, these are flash forwards. So after all was said and done, she and Jeremy Renner had a child. But for some reason, I just sort of felt like it was a flash forward.
Do you know why you thought that, Mark?
Because
we watched Lost.
Oh,
season 3.
Oh, and I grew a big, crazy beard like Matthew Fox instantly in the movie theater.
We have to go back.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, man. Sorry.
I love that show.
Quick digression. Go ahead.
And I hated at the end of Arrival that we found out that Amy Adams was in purgatory the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Really weird.
So this movie, right, we've got our Amy Adams and our Jeremy Renner, who are both attractive people, right?
Yeah.
And they like, they're playing pretty, very, very intelligent, right? But they're playing like pretty much like regular people, scientists. And I love that this movie just let them be regular people.
And I also like that Jeremy Renner helped Amy Adams for the majority of the film. Yeah. Like she wasn't the sidekick, like listening to the man. He was the one there helping her. He was still working on everything and he figured some things out. But I feel like he kind of took the lead from Amy Adams. And I like that. I feel like that was refreshing in a movie for once.
Yeah. It was refreshing to see like smart people, but not like caricatures of smart people. Like Jeremy Renner, like he wasn't like, you know, just in front of a whiteboard or like always just like playing with his pen, like flipping it like in his hands, or just like kind of talking really fast all the time. Like he was just like, he seemed like a dude that you would probably have a drink with after, you know, trying to figure out this really complex equation.
You know? After he saved the world.
Yeah, it's like, oh man, I'm tired. You want to grab like a blue moon?
Only if there's two orange lights.
movies are always so busy making, like, the smartest person in the story, like, the most idiosyncratic person as well. And, like, while that does happen, like, my experience is that when I meet the smartest people in a field related to my interests, like, they're just regular people who know a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this movie lets that go. I like that.
I like the I liked how they introduced Amy Adams to the Abbott and Costello, the aliens, as well. She wasn't just like, oh, cool. Like, she blew it the first time around. Like, she had to, like, really grasp what just happened. And that was all throughout the film. I like that sense of wonder that was there.
Yeah, and you know what else? Like, this movie did something that maybe other movies momentarily touched on in some communicative, you know, montage or something. But this movie was about the socio-anthropological aspect of communication with an entity and or language that you have no understanding of. They bring up how it's not just words they need to know, but like, how do they identify? Do they identify as individuals collectively? Not at all. Like, you know, how do they interpret things? How is their language structured? It affects meaning. And they got into all this stuff that may have ever been so barely touched on in other movies.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, maybe I'm remembering it wrong. Maybe you guys can correct me. But, like, you know, what they said and what they wrote, like didn't always mean the same thing. Like, I guess they use both to communicate at the same time, if I remember correctly. But now, and they also perceive time in a different way, so that also affects how they communicate. It was just like, these are all very heady concepts, but the movie kind of handled very gracefully, I thought.
And I love how Abbott and Costello just sort of waited until they could figure out their language.
Yeah.
Because they could understand theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I was talking to a friend of mine about this social anthropology aspect. He brought it up when I was talking to him, but he was an anthropology major. Then he's been working the last 15 years in international business. So foreign language conducted negotiations with different cultures. And he speaks four languages. So he's familiar with anthropology and foreign languages and the delicacy of politely but assertively interacting with other cultures, other languages, other backgrounds. And he thought that everything that impressed me was on point. It wasn't like when you talk to the, you know, the purported expert where they're like, oh, no, they got this wrong and that wrong. And this, it would take 5,000, not 8,000 level. This just, you know, they say something that's totally pointless to us. Like he thought that it was very impressive as well. So that made me appreciate it even more in hindsight.
Yeah.
So there was a neat thing about this, right? So in this movie, the urgency was a very different speed than we're used to in a sci-fi movie involving aliens.
Yeah, there was no face punches immediately.
Right. There were never, well, there was sort of a face punch, I guess. I wasn't crazy about that, but I understood its inclusion when the guy, you know, tries to bomb them.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, like,
welcome
but
to time Earth. Is of the,
Forrest Whitaker is really serious as that general or colonel, whatever he was, that, you know, this is urgent. I need to get back to these people. You know, I need to understand what you're dealing with, so that I can get them to understand, because they're going to want to know, like, how this can be used against us. So it's like a lot of urgency, right? And in most movies, that turns into missiles and testing the waters and seeing their weaknesses. And this, it was all about rational explanations, taught very well to a layperson to communicate to others, to propagate patience. And what movie where aliens were present did that ever happen in? Like, we see patience and contact, but in the movie Contact, it's all about information, not about an alien being present. Like, yeah. When aliens are present, movies tend never to be patient when aliens are present. And I feel like this one did that. And I mean, I can't think of another example of a patient sci-fi movie when aliens and humans are present together.
Battleship, definitely not.
No, not a very patient movie.
It, yeah.
Independence Day, not a very patient movie. It's
what I liked. I've been reading a few things. There's sort of like a mini backlash going on about this film, and I've been reading people
because they expected something with more action.
Yeah, and a lot of people are going, it's decently mediocre. I don't know why all these critics are fawning over it. But this is not a mediocre movie. This is a very good movie told by Denis Villeneuve. He directed Prisoners, Enemy, Sicario, great director. The cinematographer, Bradford Young, was on point. You know, really good editors. Lazarus' favorite, Johan Johansson, did the score.
Yes.
This is a movie that has talent on every level. And it's told patiently, smart. It's handles its nonlinear plot well. Scientists have been watching this and they got an A. I sent you guys that 30-minute clip. I guess I can add it to the podcast. This 30-minute clip of this guy talking about this film, and it received the A in the science for, you know, movie science, of course. But this is not a movie that is good because it's different, or it's good because everyone's saying it's good. This is a movie that is good.
Period. Agreed. Yeah.
And for people to be like, you know, there's people next to me in the movie theater that were like, we should have watched The Accountant. And I don't think this is a movie. I think some people were expecting an alien film, but it's a very thoughtful film. It's like there's an article on Collider how it talks about empathy. And there's another article from Slate, I believe, that's saying it's just smart sci-fi, and that it's a hit. It might actually help movies like this in the next few years.
Is it me, or do you think that almost every complainer, it not only is it that they expected more action, but they think of aliens plus humans in a sci-fi movie to equal DEFCON fucking right now nuclear attack?
Yeah, and I don't want to sound – don't get mad at me, but I'm talking about the extremists here. I feel like the same people that are hating on this right now are the same people that got mad at critics for disliking Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman, colon, Dawn of Justice. Hmm. Like, they're the same, like, all critics don't know everything. But I don't think this is a mediocre movie at all. I think this is a very good movie that'll be around for a long time. And, you know, this is like, it has very simple themes about communication and words as weapons, but it's very dense. This is not a movie that was just made. It's not a slapdash movie. This is a very thoughtful film.
I mean, to me, this was like the Ex Machina of this year, because Ex Machina, while it had a little more going on with the effects intrigue, if you will, with the Ava character, like Ex Machina was normally never thrilling by the actions on the screen. It was thrilling just by your continuous interest and curiosity of what was happening. But on the screen, not a lot of exciting things were happening throughout most of the movie. I can't help but – because I heard people tell me that they thought Ex Machina was boring, mostly online.
I thought it was thrilling watching their performances.
I'd say that about Arrival too, though. To me, it was very internally – it was a calm thrill, if that makes sense. Like,
what you're watching is so good. Like, it's good cinema. Like, Lazbath, what did you think? You sent us a text after you watched this saying it was one of the best of the year. Like, did you feel like a thrill, or how did you feel after watching this?
Yeah, there were – it definitely felt like a thriller at times, and not in the usual sense. Like, Johnny Depp and Nick of Time. Well, that's a scary movie reference.
Wait, where did that come from?
I know. Like, I was thinking thriller movies, and that just came up. Whatever. But, you know, like, the scene where they're entering the spacecraft for the first time, and it's like, everything, like, about that scene, like, they just took their time. Like, they just kind of put their equipment on slowly, and, like, I think, like, it was either Amy Adams or Jeremy Renner asked one of the guys, like, so what do they look like? Well, you'll find out. And, like, the suspense just builds throughout, and, like, when they're just, like, going up on that scissor lift through that perfectly spaced a hole, and they have to jump up, and gravity just kind of like rotates in a weird way, and then like you finally meet the aliens. Like, there were a lot of very slow but very suspenseful scenes in that movie, and it's just I don't know. It's not like a fast paced movie, but I think you still get like your thriller slash suspense kind of Jones off. You know,
I was perpetually enthralled. I can say almost every minute of this movie, I was completely captivated by what was happening.
And there's a lot of great moments, but what you're talking about, and we talked about it last week's episode with the scissor lift scene where they enter. So they get in, they get dressed really slowly into their suits. They take the truck in, they take the scissor lift up. The whole sequence is it's an instructional guide. Like if you were building IKEA, it would say insert this. So like every step is built out for you. So you know exactly what the trip is from their base camp into the ship. So the next time you show that, you don't have to because you know exactly how they got there. And I just think that's such brilliant, patient filmmaking. They broke the whole thing down for you, and that familiarized you with everything. I feel like Don't Breathe did a good job of that this year. I think when you can build that sense of location, it makes everything so much more familiar and suspenseful.
Yeah, I think that was definitely one of the best scenes. And I think like another maybe suspenseful scene is the scene where Amy Adams, like she finally kind of pieces all together, like she starts to realize, like you know, these aliens, like they see time not in a linear way, but like as kind of a just like a kind of like an omnipresent way, I guess. I don't know. I can't. The words like escape me. But like when she starts like seeing into the future, and she communicates with the Chinese general, like when you called me, like that was kind of the pivotal moment, and like. It was just like during that scene, it was just like it. You couldn't help but, you know, but be on the edge of your seat. I'm like, oh man, like this is great, you know.
Yeah, and he, you know, he came up to her and he said, "You know what the words he spoke in Mandarin were?" Mm. He said, "In war, there are only widows." That's what he said to her at the end.
Oh,
and there was no subtitles, so I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it's a different kind of suspense. Like it's I mean, not to sound like kind of elitist or snobby, but like it's the type of movie that you need to have your brain on. You can't just like turn your brain off, you know, and just sit back.
Do you think some people don't like that because of that? Because it's just you have to be on. Like for this movie, I don't know. I like that though. I like having to be on.
Well, the thing is, like these days, like people normally associate sci-fi with like big, kind of big tentpole event spectacles, like the new Star Trek movie, Star Wars, things like that. So, and you don't really need to pay too much attention to those. I'll probably start a lot of arguments with that, but you know, yeah, that's what people normally associate with sci-fi these days.
Yeah. And I want to say that general, the Chinese general, he's an actor, Zi Ma. Mm-hmm. And I worked with him on Million Dollar Arm, and he said it was a gentleman.
Oh, okay.
Name dropping.
There you go.
He's a good dude. So anytime you see this guy on screen, know that he's actually like not a turd behind the camera. That guy, I liked him a lot. I shouldn't have named. That's stupid. But I don't know. I like that guy a lot. So whenever I see him on screen, it makes me happy. So yeah, he's one of the good ones.
Keep dropping those names.
I shouldn't have done that. I don't know. He's just a good dude. So when I saw him on screen, I was just so happy. Because at first I thought he was just going to be like, remember how they were just showing clips of him? And I was like, oh, great. They're just using him as like clips. But at the end, he had a really good moment with Amy Adams.
Yeah.
And that's just made that moment between him and Amy Adams at the end was so good. And it just made me so happy. And then it created like, at first you think he's like this one-dimensional general, but then they created this three-dimensional man. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I mean, also with these cultures around the world, how do we know how people would act? Like, how do we,
That brings up that socio-anthropological aspect all over again in a way.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's, what did they say? He was always used to being the aggressor, this general. So I don't know. And when, you know, when Abbott and Costello said that their words were going to be weapons for them in 3,000 years, like, or they didn't say 3,000 years, but they left them a weapon, like that would freak people out. And just because it's a misunderstanding, of course. But I don't know. I even like the supposedly one dimensional characters came across as more than that. And I love that in movies.
So yeah, and it had its moments of levity peppered in there, all about the communication learning process. Like that, there was like the whole spectrum of human emotion there, as there should be in a good movie like this, but a good film like this. I don't know. This movie impacted me a lot. Like, I kind of left that theater where, you know, sometimes you see a great film or an exhilarating movie and you walk out like, oh my God, let's talk about this immediately. This is the first thing on my mind. I walked out of this just kind of like quietly trying to gather like my thoughts, not to analyze the movie, but I was kind of taken away with it.
And you know what I find interesting about science fiction? So I know I bring up my wife a lot, but Megan, you guys all know her. You were at the wedding. And so it seems like the biggest conversations we've had about a lot of movies have been science fiction in the last few years. Like, I remember we watched Prometheus and then Ex Machina and this. Like, you know, we take walks and, like, we were talking about this movie for about 45 minutes. I kind of like how the themes of science fiction, especially with, like, Westworld now. I feel like science fiction really raises, when it's good, really raises some good – I mean, Prometheus is more asking questions because I had no idea what happened. But I don't know. I feel like when a science fiction is good, it can open up a discussion. And I've seen a lot of that online, and it makes me happy.
Yeah, I've got actually a group of people where all of us have a group chat in Facebook. And we just usually start our work days at our desks, and we just, you know, randomly chat about what we saw in the news, this, that, or the other. We're all in different states.
Or New Jersey Turnpike Wrestling.
New Jersey Turnpike Wrestling. These friends of mine are in Kentucky and Alabama, as it turns out. But we just chat about whatever. And normally we'll say, hey, what movie did you see? Oh, I saw this. Oh, is it good? Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Should I see it? Yeah. And it's usually just that.
Yeah.
This movie, one of my friends said, you guys see Arrival? Yeah. No, whatever. And he says, okay, wait. Side chat, because one of the guys in the chat hadn't seen the movie. So he chats me directly. So if you knew that future, would you have that child? So like, this provoked the one conversation about a movie that I've had with this group of people all year. And it was that provocative film ending question.
Yeah.
But like, it affected him. And he's not a crazy movie buff like us. Like, he's just a guy who likes watching a good movie every now and then.
Yeah, and I like it. I like the discussion, and I like that it became a hit. Like, this movie's made money, which is almost a miracle in itself. But I think quality, you know, people respect quality. It's like it's a rare movie for, like, not like, it's a rare movie for adults.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. I'm not talking about, like, Cinemax stuff. Like, it's like the rare, like, thinking, yeah. Yeah, not like faux thinking, like Crash. Like, this is like,
it doesn't get over. It doesn't get too taken away with itself. Like, it doesn't get so intellectual that it's like, let's be mysterious. It doesn't do that. It wants its audience to walk out understanding it.
Yeah, it's not like I don't know if you guys watch like Primer or Upstream Color by Shane Carruth.
I know, like, Primer.
Yeah, he leaves a lot of loopholes in those movies, and at the end, you're like, what the fuck.
Hey, there are numerous multi-thousand word essays trying to argue the ending of Primer.
But like, I feel like with this movie, you're kind of like, oh, cool. Like, yeah. I like it. Like, it's, you get it. And I think that's confident. I think this is a very, I don't know if it's going to, I hope, the problem is Amy, this is like, this is going to sound weird. Like, Tom Hanks was so good in Sully. I think people don't know how good he is. Like, they just kind of take it for granted. And I feel like that's Amy Adams in this movie. She's so good, but people are like, oh, she's Amy Adams. Like, but this movie was legit acting. Like, she had – I know this sounds weird. She had to act. Every actor acts. But she was really good in this film. But I don't think she's going to win anything.
Boy, I hope she gets nominated. But, yeah, in the sea of other movies out that have different natured performances, I can see how she would be readily overlooked.
She needs to star in like The Revenant too and just lay in a puddle, and then she win an Oscar.
I think she'll at least get nominated. You know, it's hard to ignore a movie like this, you know, come award season.
How, like, I guess, you know, but you know what's weird, like Ex Machina, right? Alicia Vikander got nominated for the Danish Girl and not Ex Machina, even though I feel like she was better in Ex Machina. So I wonder if sci-fi sometimes is just like kind of not taken seriously.
Well, you know, historical films do have a historical edge with Academy Awards. And also that was a kind of a provocative topic.
Yeah.
That movie. So I think that kind of double-edged out Ex Machina.
And they couldn't.
Everybody in Ex Machina should have walked away with the damn Oscar, if you ask me.
And they couldn't have patted themselves on the back for giving an award to Ex Machina either. Like, you know, there's pat yourself on the back movies like Crash and stuff like that. Like, I still can't believe Crash won over Brokeback Mountain. But,
So, wait, one playful thought in all our serious talk here. When she was working on her iPad, this is more than halfway into the movie, she's working on her iPad.
She was playing Angry Birds.
Did anyone else see her working out that sentence by selecting the words with the touchscreen and thinking, oh, yeah, alien language, there's an app for that?
Yeah, like they were like pulling it up, and I'm like, holy quit.
I mean, it totally makes sense that would happen, they would do that. But I just turned to my friend. It was like the one time that I turned to my friend who was seeing the movie with me to talk, because I was so taken by this movie. I was just, oh, yeah, there's an app for that.
You know, Randy Quaid somewhere was like, I knew it.
Randy Quaid.
She pulls out her Apple Watch, does like a little thing. And then like, oh, yeah, Abbott and Stella, like, oh, okay. That's what they were talking about.
I think Randy Quaid thinks that this is a documentary about the truth behind the killers of Heath Ledger. He thinks that Heath Ledger was killed.
Does he really?
Yeah, and a bunch of other actors who died surprisingly and unsuspected. He is a part of a group of people who believe that there's like a cabal that of wealthy, privileged people who this is his own words before he disappeared.
The Illuminati.
Years ago. Like, he thought that there were a group of wealthy people who would eliminate Hollywood stars for some – I didn't read about the reasons.
Oh, great. And now we're on a list thanks to you, Levin Good.
Hey, oh, gosh. Well, look.
Oh, man. And we're in alphabetical order, too, so I'm screwed.
Say something nice about Steve Buscemi so when he puts on his lipstick sloppily, he'll take your name off the list.
Yeah.
You're the best, Steve. I love your cameos. Yeah. Trees Lounge.
Okay, so once we start getting into Randy Quaid crackpot theories, I think it's time to start saying our goodbyes. What's the final verdict on The Arrival and Arrival?
B-A.
B-A.
I recommend both, but I would say everybody on the planet should see Arrival. People who want to watch a really fun sci-fi movie, okay, go see The Arrival as well.
Okay. All right. There you go. Before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make?
The Lamb, Shark Dropper, and the new podcast, Levin Goods Without Ladders.
Yeah. Is it because the Levin Good broke the ladder?
No, you just don't have them. You're like Doctors Without Borders. So it's like you guys just jumping up and down trying to get the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine, actually Neil, who provided one of our questions today and who's provided a bunch before, he's been enjoying our podcast a lot. He talks to me about it, and it inspired him a couple months ago to put together his own podcast, and he came out with his own episode last week. It's called The Real Neil's Deal, or Neil's Deal. It's Real Neil's Deal on Twitter, but either way, he's just starting. He's excited about it, so I thought I'd give him a little.
Is it on iTunes, or like where can we find it?
He's on SoundCloud, and he has a Facebook page and a Twitter page. He's just started. It's totally green.
Okay.
The real Neil's Deal.
Or Neil's Deal is the thing, is the podcast. I'm talking an awful lot of that.
So Neil's Deal is the thing?
Yeah, and Real Neil's Deal is his Twitter.
Right.
So what, Neil's Deal and Real Neil Deal?
Yes. And it's not about movies. He just likes us, and he was asking me a lot about podcasting, and then he was like, hey, Levin Good, I made a podcast. Would you listen to it? So, cool.
So it's about the real deal, according to Neil's deal. It's just Neil being honest.
Yeah,
and Neil has honestly given us probably about 10 pretty zany listener questions so far. So appreciate Neil.
Hey, we support you, Neil. You're the real deal.
Love you, Neil. Good luck in your podcast. So, yeah,
we gotta love our Lazabeth from Shark Dropper. Like Mark said, Lazabeth does all of our editing. We say it every few episodes, but it's got to be reminded he is our editor.
Yeah,
he makes our banter turn into magic. That graces your drive to work.
I will take all the credit and none of the blame.
Send me the blame. I got thick skin.
Okay. I already did. So
you can toss me the blame unless I'm already dubiously sitting on a ladder.
I'll just CC it on the.
The only way you can sit on a ladder if the ladder's on the ground already.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds uncomfortable, but I guess that's okay.
Otherwise, you'd break it.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to dig into my tailbone then.
Well, then we'd have to cancel the podcast, 11 Goods Without Ladders, because if someone gets a photo of you on a ladder, it's all over. I worked on a reality show once, and they got a picture of a guy who supposedly only was barefoot.
Hey, Mark, before you finish that story, for my co-host, Mark Hoffmark.
Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah. John Levengood.
Hi, folks.
I'm your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next time when Mark finishes the story.
So this is what happens. We go to this thing and go down, and then we go.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! 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 This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.